The show is live and local. It's your connection to local music and more. And today's program will include some bird song and also some improvisations of various kinds from clarinetist, composer, and writer David Rothenberg. He's going to be performing with Charles Lindsay and Jason Finkelman tonight at Indigo Artists Co-op in downtown Champaign. That show starts at 8:30. Also tonight at 5 o'clock at the Krannert Center, it's their Uncorked show. And this time around, it's with the bluegrass group based in Monticello called High Cotton. And we'll be hearing some samples of their work later on in the show today. It's live and local. Hope you'll stay with us. We just heard music called Trio Minora, which is from clarinetist, composer, improviser, and more, David Rothenberg. And he is going to be at a performance on, well, tonight actually, at 8:30 at Indigo Artists Co-op in downtown Champaign, along with Charles Lindsay and Jason Finkelman. The program is simply called A Performance of Improvised Music and Live Projections. Which on its own sounds interesting enough, but if, when I also tell you that the music you just heard was recorded live at a wildlife sanctuary in Australia and featured the sounds of a particular kind of bird, well, you probably figured out already that there was a bird in there, but that hopefully will make the whole thing a little bit even more intriguing. David Rothenberg is on the phone with me, I think, at an airport in St. Louis, are you?
That's
right.
Right.
The lyrebird. There's a bunch of kinds of lyrebirds, but why don't you, before we've been talking about this particular bird, how did you get into recording birds and other animals and putting them into your music?
Well, for some time now, I've been interested in how, as a musician, I could learn from the music in the natural world. I really think that songs sung by birds are music. They don't just sound like music. They really are music. In the life of the birds, they are sung as musical performances. They're not like language. You can't translate them into other words. They're pieces of music. And I wrote a book about this called Why Birds Sing and put out a CD that went with it. And one of the most exciting things I did is to go play live with lyrebirds in Australia. That's Lyre. And this particular bird you hear is a very famous lyrebird because this is the bird that appears in The Life of Birds, the David Attenborough TV show. And this clip of this particular bird singing was voted in England as the most popular thing that ever appeared on any David Attenborough program. So it's very famous. You can watch it on YouTube. And this bird imitates the sounds of camera clicks and other things because he lives in this giant open-air zoo. He has, like, a huge amount of space for himself. He has nothing else to do there but sing. Occasionally some females are let in there. If he can mate with them, gets him interested in singing. But more singing than anything else. And so it's really a good opportunity. I went there with flutist Michael Pestel, and the two of us sat there and played clarinet and flute along with one bird. There's only one bird in there, and his song is perhaps the most complex of all bird songs. It blends together the songs of about 50 different birds that live in his natural habitat, the rainforests of Australia.
So you were actually playing with the bird, next to the bird?
That's right. We're sitting there live playing. We played for a few hours, and this section of a few minutes is where the most interesting things started to happen. And these birds really have a repertoire of so many different sounds they use. And this species of lyrebird, the superb lyrebird, really improvises along with what he hears. And although he doesn't usually get to play along with other musicians, I really think in this passage, he likes it. He's interested. He's intrigued. He might be troubled, but I think he's particularly intrigued. He sounds intrigued. And certainly, people there, you know, various tourists watching the whole thing said, like, they assumed this is just part of his daily routine. You had to play some music to the lyrebirds to keep them happy, which was nice.
Did the bird give any indication of interest in what you were doing?
Oh, yeah, he would start when he'd hear a sound, then he'd stop. He would be curious because lyrebirds, the males are the ones that sing. They tend to compete with sound. You know, one sings, another wants to sing at the same time, and a certain part of the song is said to be oriented towards females to attract them. Another part of the song is supposed to be kind of competing with sound. So it's like, kind of a battle back and forth. So certain sounds make them think differently.
And how long does it take them to learn a sound? And did this one give any indication of trying to learn any of your sounds?
It's believed that lyrebirds take 6 years to learn their songs, so it takes a long time. So it's likely that all the sounds he made came from his repertoire of sounds that he already had, which is already a few hundred little noisy syllables and things. So he's got a lot to work from. But he puts it together in different orders, in different ways. And I think we probably had an effect on how he did that. But there are other birds, you know, actually, surprisingly enough, I've played live with whales, with humpback whales, that the animals seem to change what they're doing right away the most.
Yeah.
Because whales really change their song very rapidly. And so they hear something new. They can be inspired to do something totally different. But the lyrebird has such a large repertoire. He changes what he's doing based on what he knows. You know, I can play this kind of sound. Like a jazz musician, he's improvising, but he's playing from a whole repertoire of things he already knows.
Well, and there's one of the lyrebirds over a period of time learns a song and then always does everything in the same order.
That's the other species, yeah. You've been reading up. It's good. That's the Albert's lyrebird. There's two lyrebird species. And one particular bird named George has been studied for 25 years. And this guy, these two scientists have just watched him, listened to him diligently all this time. And it's pretty amazing.
And he doesn't usually let people close to him when he sings.
Other members of his species do not, but George is at least used to these two guys.
So that's why he's exceptional.
That's why you have to study George. He's gotten used to people. When I heard the story, I thought he lived in someone's backyard or was in some kind of semi-tame place like the lyrebird that you just heard. But in fact, no, he lives in the wild. We had to walk a few hours to his territory.
And again, you performed with him, so to speak?
Yeah, we sat live and played, you know, we listened. And again, this is the moment where it seemed to be most interesting, the duet together. I can't know exactly how much he's responding to what I'm doing.
Sure.
I presented as this is what happened, the two of us together. It was live. We didn't mix it or change it afterwards. So listen to it, see what you think.
Yeah, well, this is the tune you named Sheer Frustration, Really. And it's David Rothenberg on the clarinet, and George, a wild Albert's lyrebird in Australia, with, it says here, a few green catbirds in the background. This
That's
was
right, yeah.
recorded live in June of 2004, and it's from David's disc called Why Birds Sing here on Live and Local. That song, or a fragment of the song we just heard, is called Sheer Frustration, really. It's the tune as named by David Rothenberg, who's the clarinetist here, along with George and Albert's Lyrebird from Lamington National Park in Australia, recorded in June 2004. David is on the phone with us now, and he's going to be giving a concert tonight at 8:30 at Indigo Artists Co-op in downtown Champaign, along with Charles Lindsay and Jason Finkelman, and we'll talk more specifically about that program later. But, David, why that particular title, Sheer Frustration, really?
Well, Sid Curtis, one of these two scientists who had been studying this lyrebird named George for 25 years, the same bird, he's noticed several things about lyrebirds. One is that they've hardly ever seen any females there. They're watching him all day. They never see any females anywhere near George. He's just singing and singing. But they do know from biology that lyrebirds, the females, lay only one egg every 2 years. Mm. They're not really that fertile, and there's not that much happening. George is just singing and singing, and Sid just said, well, I reckon it's all just sheer frustration, really.
Yeah, I imagine so. Or maybe he no longer is interested and he just prefers to sing.
I think he's trying. But, you know, what it says to me is it's not just sheer frustration, really. It's music. These birds have to sing. They must make music. And so it's of the very essence of the lyrebird that he is a musician. And this is just the most incredible bird music that's out there. You can read in the book the structure is very complex, very involved with all these different sections. It doesn't sound much like human music. You might just think it sounds like a lot of scratchy noises. But if you listen to it and study it, you'll hear this is just like a really structured piece of music from a whole other alien musical culture, a whole different species. And tonight I'm going to recreate this. I'm going to play George's song and play along with it live as if we were out there in the field.
Well, since you segued to tonight, let me give a few more details about that. Of course, you're going to have your clarinet there with you, and also a laptop, as will both of your colleagues, Charles Lindsay and Jason Finkelman. Jason is from around here, currently from around here, works at the University of Illinois and involved in various musical projects. He kind of specializes in an Afro-Brazilian instrument called the berimbau, but also does some other sorts of performing. And how do the laptops figure in, especially plural, that all three of you are doing something on laptop?
Well, one thing I would say is that making this kind of music has evolved a lot over the last few years. That when I started performing these kinds of things, I'd have just preset digital recordings of bird sounds. I'd just press play, and then I'd play along with them. But today, the computer has become such a fluid instrument for playing around with sound. You can use it live on stage, change the sound. I can play my clarinet into the computer. It can also change the sound. I can have them interact, and people together can use their computers as musical instruments. And one other recent project I've done, you know, with my students in New Jersey, we have created the New Jersey Laptop Orchestra, where I have like 10 students all playing their computers as instruments together, improvising, and none of them are, you know, specializing in music, but I get them to hear all these kinds of sounds as the roots of musical material, and they start to make this kind of music of many machines together that no one's really heard before. And we'll be doing something like that tonight as well, along with the sounds of, you know, I'll put the sounds of lyre birds and insects and whales on the computer, and I'll change them as they go. I'll have to use them as material and play live along with this, and also have my clarinet sound perhaps be turned into whale sounds or bird sounds by the machine. And so, you know, who knows what could come out, what's causing it, how it all fits together.
How was it that you started to get into this relationship between humanity and nature?
I think it started when I was a teenager, and I was interested in playing music along with ecology and environmental issues and nature. And I grew up in Connecticut, and I read in the local paper about this Connecticut musician named Paul Winter, who was playing with wolves and whales and eagles. He had made this record. And I said, huh, that sounds really cool. I'd like to do something like that. So I got to know him. He lived nearby. And then for many years, I moved totally away from it and didn't do anything like that. And then I came back to it years later. I sort of thought there must be so many people doing this. But it turned out, no. You know, not too many people really took this seriously. And very few people like to play live along with these sounds, because it makes a music that's sort of surprising and uncertain and strange, rather than putting the animal sounds into familiar contexts. You know, I kind of wanted to change my music because I was influenced by these new strange sounds. And so it turned out to be a surprising development. I didn't expect I'd spend so much time doing this. Actually, the main reason I've come on this trip, in addition to playing this show, is to record the sounds of 13-year cicadas that come to Illinois every 13 years and make a huge chorus of noise in the trees. So the next book I'm going to do is on insects and music.
And how have you figured out the timing to record these cicadas?
They come out every 13 years on schedule. It's perhaps the longest rhythm in the animal world, that the cicadas, like clockwork, return every 13 years to this area.
But have you narrowed it down to month, week, and day?
To month and week. And now, of course, you have things like the internet where there's maps showing where they all are.
Mm.
We can just look on that map. Look at cicadamania.org. You can do it too. Or magicicada.org, and you can see the maps. You can go see them.
So you'll be recording them in various places around here, or just one place?
Missouri, southern Illinois, and perhaps even around Champaign on my map. There's one. They're supposed to be there. So.
And then playing with them?
We'll see. Yeah, I've got some. I brought a saxophone. It's louder because I think it'll be so loud with millions of cicadas per acre.
No one will ever hear you.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. It's going to be pretty strange. And we're going to use some of those sounds in the show. We'll hear the strange sound of the periodical cicada.
That's pretty amazing. I wanted to hear play some music from a CD that came out about a year before the one we've sampled, the Why Birds Sing one. This one is called Suru, which, as it happens, is named after another bird.
That's right. Suru is named after the Sorolind, which is that's in the language Estonian, and that's where my wife is from, Estonia. So I'm often there, and in English it's called the European Marsh Warbler, and this bird does this one amazing thing that no other bird does. Many birds in Europe migrate to Africa every winter, but only the Sorolind learns African bird songs, flies back to northern Europe, and sings them one after another really fast, like this strange bird song identification tape at high speed. It's totally manic sounding. You can't really pick out what's going on. Although it was a teenage girl in Belgium who figured this out, what was going on.
Seriously?
Nobody else could hear it. She had really good hearing. And she said, I'm hearing African bird songs that I heard on this other tape. And the ornithologist said, ridiculous, birds don't do that. She goes, no, I think they're doing that. And then she went to college and graduate school and wrote her dissertation on this, proving that's what was going on.
So she not only had good ears, she had a great memory.
She went on. Yeah, she also, you could transcribe these things. Scientists tend to print bird songs out as sonograms. And in the book, you could see all these pictures. It's easier to identify on paper. What you hear is hard to describe. It's not like human music. You can't write it in notation. And so I named the record after that, just kind of more conceptually. There's only one piece has these bird sounds on it on the record. This record has two American musicians. And one of them is a good friend of Jason's, the guy who introduced me to Jason, John Wizorek, percussionist. And the third musician is a guitarist from Estonia, Robert Jurjendal. And we recorded this in duets, it's a trio record, but I recorded first with the percussionist, and then another time recorded with the guitarist, and we put it together. So we made it seem like there was a trio. We weren't all live in the same place.
Including this tune called Music Illusion. Anything further to say about that other than just hear some of it?
I think Music Illusion began with a guitarist and me playing, I think, bass clarinet, right? Bass clarinet.
We'll find out. It's particularly beautiful. See if you're remembering the right one. Excuse me. It's David Rothenberg with us here on Live and Local, and from his disc called Suru. You can hear him in concert tonight at 8:30 at Indigo Artists Co-op in downtown Champaign. Thank you. That was called, we heard part of a tune called Music Illusion, with David Rothenberg on clarinet. David, is this your composition, or was this a group improvisation, as you said, put together sort of in pieces?
I would say it's a group composition put in pieces. Like, you know, it wasn't all improvised together. You know, we did something I played with Robert, guitarist in Tallinn, Estonia. We recorded that. And then we took that, I brought it back to New York and sat there with John Wieczorek. We figured what he could add to it, how we could be put together. So it's these things, it's hard to say what's improvised and what's composed, similar to the behavior of a superb lyrebird that you heard in the beginning of the show. He was singing a lot of stuff he knows, but he's putting in different orders. Is he improvising or is he composing? You know, he's lots of stuff he knows, he's learned, but he puts it together in different ways each time.
And that's a lot of what's going to happen at the concert tonight, concert of a performance, not even calling it a concert, of improvised music, and we hope live projections, if Charles Lindsay's laptop works successfully, I guess, along with Jason Finkelman doing some of his own laptop electronics and also adding percussion to your clarinet and saxophones. And Indigo Gallery is at 9 East University Avenue in downtown Champaign. The whole thing starts at 8:30 and pretty reasonable information admission prices. And I'm glad you were able to join us in this conversation here, David, and at least hopefully intrigue people to going to the performance, but also maybe intriguing them to look you up and look up some of the books you've written, including Why Birds Sing and Thousand Mile Song, and maybe look forward to your next one. Do you want to comment on that a little bit, your next book?
Well, first, I have one book coming out this fall, which kind of is about the big question behind these two projects of whales and birds and wondering why nature evolves such amazingly beautiful things. And this next book is called Survival of the Beautiful. Mm. It's really about why evolution produces such cool, crazy, beautiful, interesting stuff like peacock's tails and nightingale songs and lyrebird songs. You know, this stuff is not very efficient. It's not an efficient use of evolutionary adaptation. These are not efficient behaviors. They take a lot of time. These birds spend a lot of time learning to sing and singing. If you wanted to design efficient creatures, they wouldn't all be like that. And so I've kind of explored Darwin's ideas in that and more things through history since then, what scientists have said about the evolution of beauty, how art has helped science, things like this, much more about visual art. Mm. But then after that, I'm going to write a book, which is going to come out in spring 2013, about insect music. And that's why I'm here listening to the cicadas, because here in Illinois, you've got the most amazing insect music anywhere. It's happening just this month. And then 13 years later from now. But it is happening in 2 years in New York when a different population emerges. That's when my book's going to come out.
Let's go out here, David, with something from your Suru disc, which came out in 2004, I believe. And this is a tune called Peter Clark, and you told me there's a bit of a touching story to it. I picked it simply because it's comes from a live gallery performance, as you're going to be doing tonight. But then you told me there's another story surrounding it.
That's right. You know, I would say Champaign is, you know, lucky to have a place like this gallery we're performing at tonight, you know, because it's great to have places like that. People can do unusual performances and exhibits, and so you're lucky to have such a place. I live near the town of Beacon, New York, an hour or so north of New York City, and they had this space called Collaborative Concepts, sort of similar, and we put on this concert in the gallery there, and it was started by this artist named Peter Clark. And he just unfortunately died several days before this show. And everybody was totally shocked and really upset. And then the gallery says, oh, we have to cancel the concert. We can't have a concert here. And then when Peter's widow heard about this, she said, what? What? You're canceling this because of Peter? You know, Peter would have said, you have to have the concert. I mean, that's what he was all about. It would only honor him to have the concert. You have to go on with it. It was really a really wonderful show, and I picked this piece to use from there. And this one was totally improvised, and it actually is, you know, clarinet, percussion, and two laptops. The two computers are affecting the sound in very subtle ways, which maybe you can pick up as you hear it. You know, what one wonderful thing with this kind of music and this kind of work is after a while you start to enjoy all sounds and hear all sounds as music, something that the composer John Cage was famously talking about. You know, you listen outward, you hear so much interesting stuff.
And folks can hear some really interesting stuff tonight at 8:30. It's David Rothenberg, my guest, along with Charles Lindsay and Jason Finkelman. A performance of improvised music and hopefully live projection starts at 8:30. Indigo Artists Co-op in downtown Champaign. And here is the tune called Peter Clark, named later after this improvised performance given at a gallery in... Where were you at this point,
Beacon, David? New York.
Beacon, New York. And David, thanks very much for joining us on Live and Local. Improvisation called Peter Craig from David Rothenberg and Company from their disc called Suru. And David, with Charles Lindsay and Jason Finkelman, will give a concert tonight of improvised music and live projections at Indigo Artists Co-op in downtown Champaign. Starts at 8:30. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. And our broadcast is made possible with support from Sweeney Brothers Carpet and Rug Gallery of Bloomington, a Norrison preferred dealer at 11 Westport Court on Bloomington's east side. Sweeney Brothers, where the beauty of a room starts with the floor. And coming up next, we have three members of the bluegrass band High Cotton with us on the show, where they're going to be playing tonight at the Krannert Center on the Uncorked series, that's in Urbana, starting at 5 o'clock. Thank you. was from the band High Cotton. They're based in Monticello, and the tune called Ralph's Banjo Special, also known as Daybreak and Dixie, the disc called Catch That Train, from which we'll actually hear the title track in a little while. High Cotton are going to be playing tonight in Urbana at the Krannert Center on the Uncorked program starting at 5, and you can enjoy the music free and also pick up some free drinks from whoever happens to be sponsoring the event this evening. And with us, we have three members of High Cotton: Bill Blickhan, who plays guitar, sings harmony lead vocals; Dan DeFan, banjo, also singing, of course; and Rick Rhodes, bass and singing. And then there's three other guys who play with the band who aren't able to be with us, which is why you're not actually going to be playing live for us today. You guys have solidarity and you want to all stick together, which is fine. But so thanks for the three of you for taking time off of whatever it is you normally do and appearing on the show.
Great to be here.
Hi, Kevin.
Am I correct that everybody is in and around Monticello, or do you come together from other communities?
Yeah, we're all from Monticello. The three of us are from Monticello. So we drove over from Monticello. Dan's working here in Champaign. And Rick and I drove over. We do have one member in Mahomet, used to live in Monticello, and one from Foosland, and one from Bloomington. So our core is from Monticello, and we've branched out a little bit as we've tapped a little more talent over time.
And how long has this talented crew been together?
About 12 years. Yeah, we came together doing a musical called The Cotton Patch Gospel. And we were called ourselves the Cotton Patch Bluegrass Band for a few years. So I think that's been about 12 or 13 years ago, though, where the core of us met up. And then we, as Bill said, we added a member or two and had a guy rotate out after that. But that's how we all came together. And most of the guys didn't know a whole lot about bluegrass to start out with, but we've kind of all dove in and gotten acquainted with it and really enjoyed it over the years.
So believe it or not, we started on stage. Yep. We just continued that. Stayed on a musical stage, though.
You know, I'm kind of remembering this story. Were you guys actually on the show and played before?
Yes.
You actually, and I'm forgetting
yes,
this.
Yeah, in Cotton Patch Gospel, the instrumentalists are actually characters within the play, with a lot of other characters, several other characters, and it's based in Valdosta, Georgia, and it's got a real southern. It's the story of Jesus's life, birth, and life and death. In Georgia, in a bluegrass rural setting way, and it's a very fun and funny play, and it's a musical, and it was a great time. It's a great play if they ever get a chance to see it.
Now, did I understand what you just said correctly, or was that a syntactical issue to suggest that Jesus was born and died in Georgia?
Yes.
Okay, you got
well,
that.
Well, that's right. That's what the play is.
Right.
It brings it into a
All
southern
right.
context, which. Is just has a lot of local humor, you know, southern humor to it. So it's great.
And so, Dan, you said that most of you didn't have a bluegrass background, but some of you did. Who were the bluegrass veterans at the
time? Well, I was a budding banjo player. I played the banjo for 5 years straight, every day without missing a day. So I was just at the front end of that, probably about a year into it. And Milt Craig, who's our one of our fiddle players, is from North Carolina, and he was in two or three bluegrass bands back in the 50s, and that's really when bluegrass was just getting started in the mid-40s, so he certainly goes way back and has met Bill Monroe and has been involved in Bean Blossom and other things, and so he has a lot of background in bluegrass. Tom is also pretty well steeped, Tom Kaler, the other fiddle player, very well steeped in bluegrass.
I think that's a very interesting comment, Dan. A lot of people think bluegrass is, they confuse it with folk music or old time music or mountain music, and that's where it gets its roots, of course. But modern bluegrass really is a 50s phenomenon with Earl Scruggs and the three finger picking banjo style. And then Bill Monroe, of course, added the mandolin. The driving mandolin and putting it together with guitar and bass and the fiddle. And that's really when bluegrass was created.
That's exactly
in the 50s.
Right. Yeah, 1946 is when Earl Scruggs joined, Lester and Earl, Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs, joined Bill Monroe's Bluegrass Boys. And that was kind of the definitive
prototype
start of bluegrass.
Yeah.
Yep.
So at what point Bill, I was going to call you Tom, sorry. Did you start picking up the interest in bluegrass and then gradually apparently some knowledge about the history and so on?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, bluegrass has always been out there. I think all of us, I'll kind of say in general for several of us, it really came with just coming together with the Cotton Patch experience and realizing how much fun acoustic music was. We'd all gone through our different phases of electric guitars of the 70s and the 80s music, and it's like, you know, you hit an age where you think, okay, that's just too loud anymore, you know. And acoustic music is a challenge, and it's fun, and it's fast, and you have harmonies, and the music's good, and the atmosphere is not bar music. You don't play in bars. You play at festivals, and you play at things like the Uncorked Festival here at Krannert, and you find out that that's just a fun type of music and a fun genre of music, and the locations where you want to play and the atmosphere you want to play. So that's what really drove me, I think, toward bluegrass.
Well, you certainly can play in bars. I mean, there's plenty of groups that do.
You sure can. You sure can.
Including locally. So does that mean if you guys are sort of beyond the interest in really loud music, that you'll be telling the Krannert sound people to crank it down when you're there?
Well, we hope that the crowd might say, you know, a little bit louder rather than just background. But yeah, it's acoustic. It should be acoustic driven rather than it's not metal. You know, it's acoustic driven. So acoustic driven in general has a different feel.
I asked that question strategically, hoping actually the Krannert people are listening, because I'm now on this mission that, you know, I just don't understand why so much music, even often acoustic, needs to be cranked. And I've noticed at the Krannert Center, stuff that's in the lobby and even in the festival theater, it's just getting louder and louder. And I don't get it, and I wish it would stop. And so
that's the young engineers.
There you go. Well, it probably is.
They're hearing.
Yeah, that's right. So they're inflicting it on the rest of us who would like to keep ours. Well, we've got another tune. We have the title tune, as promised, from the High Cotton CD. We're talking with three members of the band High Cotton, called Catch That Train. And you were just telling me kind of an interesting story about this tune and the train to which it refers and so on.
Well, about 10 years ago, I think, there was a Reader's Digest story about this train in, I think, Canton, Ohio.
Canton, Ohio.
And I think, the movie that was just made, Unstoppable, was about that same train. And I think they put it in Stanton, Pennsylvania. But anyway, Milt in the band wrote a song about that from the Reader's Digest story of the same story from Unstoppable with Denzel Washington. And so we're going to post this on YouTube, and I think it's going to go viral, and then we're going to, maybe they'll do an Unstoppable 2 and use us as a soundtrack.
And the gist of it is that a train got away, basically a string of cars with an engine on it that did not have an engineer, and it kept speeding up, and it was going to hit a curve in Canton, Missouri. The train would derail, and there were toxic chemicals that were in tanker cars that would have caused a lot of death, you know, in the town. And it was up to one person to hop on a train and try to catch up to it and very gently kiss it from the back end, which is hitching it from the back end just right so that he could catch it and slow it down before it went, you know, took that curve in that town. And they chased it for a long, long way to get there. And so it was a very fascinating story. And like Dan said, Milt Craig just is a great storyteller, and he decided to tell that story in a song.
And I haven't seen the film, but I assume it's a thriller with plenty of ups and downs. Or this one, this song, I'll bet,
has Denzel Washington in it, so it's
a lot of special effects.
Yeah.
But this song, I'll bet, is just an up tune.
It's acoustic, that's for sure.
Yeah.
it's not overly driving. It's a story song. It's
that's
a ballad
right.
story
that's
song.
Right.
Here we go. It's Catch That Train from High Cotton. Here on Live and Local, you can hear him at the Krannert Center in the lobby tonight for free at 5 o'clock.
Tried to derail it. and blow a town to bits. The last chance to catch that train was the engine carrying my coffee cup, and just enough time to call my wife, I love you dear, a cowboy up.
Hey freight train, chase that tanker down. Run away freight train, gotta save that town.
Toxic fireball she'll be. I get some speed and then kiss her slow. Ain't no one to stop her but me. I hold your breath, now there's a hitch. Guy jump on, no harm, shut her down. Think of all the switches she jumped. Rode the silver bullet and saved the town.
Hey, freight train, chase that tanker down. Run away, freight train, gotta save that town.
That train, get your check from the waiter, and then step right up and pop a home run. You can have your coffee later.
Hey freight train, chase that tanker down. Run away freight train, gotta save that town.
Tune called Catch That Train from High Cotton here. And tune, that's the one written by Mel Craig?
Yes.
Yeah. And sung by the guy who has hardly said a thing here, who's with us from High Cotton, Rick Rhodes.
He's shy.
I don't think so. And he also plays bass in the band. And I know, Rick, you were in another band, was one of our very first guests on Live and Local almost 2.5 years ago now, or maybe in that summer, called
Stringtown Lane.
Stringtown Lane. And is that group still
That group is still together. That's with Bill here and Leonard Rumry, who is the stage director for the new play at the Virginia Theater 1787, which will be a world premiere. So
he's stage directing.
We don't see Leonard as much right now.
Oh, I didn't know he did stage direction. I knew he did musical direction.
Well, he's used to musical direction, but this time he's the full stage director, so he's pretty excited. And Leonard's very capable, so.
Well, we'll be hearing about that show later on, because that is a world premiere musical being written right here in our community for its first performance at the Virginia Theater. But that is a whole nother story. Speaking of stories, Rick, y'all were telling me while we're listening to the music how you kind of got started. At least with his band, and so you're going to have to tell the story because it's kind of silly sounding.
Well, I was an actor in the play, the Cotton Patch Gospel, but I didn't play an instrument. I was just a singer and an actor. And so they got to the point where they wanted to have a singer in the band, but they didn't have an instrument for me to play, and I had never been introduced to any string instruments whatsoever. I could play a G chord on a guitar if I worked at it long enough. And they said, well, you get up on stage with us and sing and hold this little egg that has rocks in it and shake it and sort of be a rhythmic background. So I literally stood on stage, sang a few songs, and shook an egg. And that was my career beginnings.
You did graduate to a guitar, though, Rick.
I graduated to a children's guitar. I hung around my neck as sort of an ornament, but I never played it. or they didn't ever have a microphone on it when I did play it. I've tried a few chords, but they didn't really work.
But you're being a more than a bit modest because you do have a musical background.
I was a music ed major at Eastern, and I taught music in the schools for a while, and so, yes, I could do that, but had never seen a bass before 1997.
Well, what was the instrument that would have gotten you into music ed? Because in order to be a music educator, you have to play something, unless
voice.
You're singing.
I was a singer.
Well, then there you go. That's your instrument, and you still use that.
Well, sometimes in the music school, they used to refer to us as singers and musicians, which, of course, hurt my feelings.
Well, I've heard that very often, actually, and I try to campaign against that right up there with loud music. Singers are musicians, too, mostly.
Exactly. We had to practice as much in the practice room, although that was my failing.
The practicing part?
Practicing, yes.
And how did that go over then when you needed to get your students to practice?
Not very well, because I couldn't convince them to do something I hadn't done myself.
Well, you could just lie, make up your story and say, or say, well, this is the terrible musician I became by not practicing, and you could, not that you are a terrible musician, but you could have said that.
Well, I didn't work on my kids either, so,
oh, well.
You know, don't do as I say is never the best thing to teach your kids.
Well, I've always found that inverse mentoring works pretty well. Here's how not to do it.
Yeah, well, I have a good example there.
I actually had a conducting teacher who will remain nameless. I probably learned most from the things he would say not to do and then do, and you saw exactly why he told you not to do it.
I think I have a black book like that. When I see people that do things, I say that's what I'm not going to do when I get older.
That's not
it's kind of like that little book, right?
Well, you mentioned choral conducting. I had, as a music major, had to take choral conducting, and I literally am a left-handed choral conductor. And having directed Handel's Messiah with a group of string players from the University of Illinois was kind of an interesting experience when I first stood up on the director's podium and raised my hands. It really confused the violin player.
But it didn't take long for him or her to get adjusted, I'm sure.
Not really, but I got strange looks.
Well, got to get used to that from instrumentalists.
Yeah, they're not like singers.
They're not like singers. No, they're not, in more ways than one. And that's not a denigration. It's just a fact. Just the way it is. Well, we're going to hear a little more from High Cotton in just a minute. They're going to be playing tonight at the Krannert Center on the Uncorked series. Starts at 5 o'clock. But first, let me tell you some of the other things you can go out, see, and hear live in our listening area. Let's see, today is Thursday, so that means that it's Beehive, the 60s musical, in Peoria, put on by Peoria Players Theater, tonight through Saturday at 7:30 with a Sunday matinee at 2:30. And Cats is at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan, starting at 8 o'clock tonight, and that runs through the weekend and also next week as well. A musical called Title of Show opens at the Summer Studio Theater at the Krannert Center. That's tonight through Saturday at 7:30, and that continues for the next few weeks. And Olivia Flanagan, a jazz vocalist, she's going to be at the Iron Post in Urbana tonight at 7 o'clock. Chamber ensembles from the East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra are giving a free concert tonight at 7 at the Chapel of St. John the Divine in Champaign. Steve Rodman and friends play folk music at the Kickapoo Landing tomorrow night at 5:30. That's in Oakwood. It's Big James and the Chicago Playboys doing blues and soul at the Castle Theater in Bloomington tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. There are auditions for children for The Music Man, ages, I'm not sure if this is ages or grades, 7 to 12, at the Busey Center for the Champaign-Urbana Theater Company production. That's tomorrow night at 6 to 9. And then adult auditions are Saturday from 10 to 5. For more information, you can go to cutc.org. And back at the Little Theater in Sullivan, their Summer Theater for Young Audiences is presenting You Bug Me, A Bug's Life, on stage tomorrow morning at 10:30 and also Saturday morning at 10:30. And finally, Candy Foster and the Shades of Blue are at Memphis on Main in downtown Champaign tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Live and Local is brought to you in part by the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines for the series collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 2 to 6 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. This Saturday's tasting features Marco Furlan of Furlan Castelcosa Winery in Italy, pouring a lineup of their family wines. Details at thecorkscrew.com. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WYLFM, and HD1 and HD2 Urbana with translators, W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. WYL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. And before we play this last track from High Cotton, it's called Working on a Building. Dan DeFend, what's the difference between a bluegrass musician and all kinds of other players?
Well, bluegrass is a very technical music, and so they say that other musicians kind of learn bluegrass to really get their chops up, and that's one thing. And what I really like about bluegrass musicians is they're very humble and just real down-to-earth people. And I've even read an interview by someone like Dwight Yoakam or a country star, and they noticed that too about bluegrass when they just being around bluegrass musicians and fans, and it's just normal people, and then there's really no star quality to it. So,
what about audience sizes?
Well, there's a saying that country music is three chords to 1,000 people. Now, if you compare that to jazz music is 1,000 chords to 3 people, and if I would transfer that to bluegrass, it's more like 3 chords to 3 people. So that's a little bit of an bluegrass is kind of a kind of a cult status, but not as mainstream, so the crowds are smaller, too, so which can be good or bad.
There you go, folks. You'll be an elite crowd tonight at 5 o'clock. Go hear High Cotton at the Cranert Center in Urbana. It's live and local.
If I was a drunkard, I'd tell you what I'd do. I'd give up drinking.